funding for THINK comes from SMU Doctor and Master of Liberal Studies programs.
You're listening to THINK on KERA. I'm Lauren Silverman, in for Chris Boyd. This week, the Dallas Commission on Homelessness Community Engagement Committee has begun a series of public meetings to educate and gather feedback from the community on how to address challenges related to homelessness. Let's start by hearing from a few people who are currently homeless in Dallas.
My name is Christopher Ali. I'm 21. I'm actually homeless myself, actually. We really need food. Like, we have a hard time finding ways to eat. Like, we have to wait on certain days to eat. The city has shelters close by, and there's people who can't get in the shelters because of their background, and we're on the streets sleeping out there. You people want to wake us up at 4 in the morning and ask us to move around. That's not fair. Where are we going to go?
My name is Terry Jones. I'm 56 years old. I used to live on the streets when I first got here. If you're homeless, man, you need to come to Dallas, okay? Dallas will look out for you, man. At least they'll put you in a position for you to help yourself, you know?
Salvador Lopez, 33. I've been homeless about 8 years. When I'm on the streets, I was trying to find everywhere, you know, buses, cool spots. And finding somewhere to stay, I got about a dozen tickets for sleeping in public. But that's the main thing, you know, sleeping, having somewhere to sleep, you know. And under the bridge, I didn't like it that much, you know. But that's an option for us people, you know, to go through, you know, where we feel a little secure, mm-hmm. you know, because no one messes with us.
Those are a few people in North Texas talking about their situation with housing. My guests this hour have been thinking about solutions to homelessness in Dallas and North Texas for some time. In the studio with me are Blake Fetterman, Executive Director of the Salvation Army's Carr P. Collins Social Service Center, Dallas City Councilman Mark Clayton, and Ikenna Mogbo, Housing Outpatient Operations Manager for MetroCare Services. Welcome, all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Blake, you were at the first community engagement meeting that was last night at Dallas City Hall. How did it go?
I think overall the response was very positive. We had about 50 community members who were in attendance, and we had 4 folks that were presenting, including myself, as well as the executive directors from Austin Street Shelter, Dallas Life, and Wayne with... I can't remember the outreach organization.
That's okay.
But in any event, so we had an opportunity to share about our experiences in working with homeless services, the services we provide, some thoughts around Tent City and its closure and what's happened since, as well as start talking about solutions to the issues that are impacting homelessness in our city. We also had an opportunity to hear from the folks during the public forum where they could ask questions. And there were some thoughtful, insightful questions, and people were just looking for answers.
And so the people who came, the 50 or so people, were the people from the community asking questions?
So we had a combination of folks that are experiencing homelessness who mm-hmm. were there asking questions and providing some feedback on their experience in the shelter system, as well as community members who, especially when we looked at downtown and in the Cedars, those folks expressing concern about the concentration of homelessness and poverty in their communities and how we can work to address that.
So, Ikenna, tell me a little bit about what you do working with some of the housing outpatient program through MetroCare Services.
Well, we at MetroCare, we provide permanent supportive housing is what my part of it is. But really what we are is kind of one-stop shopping for indigent people with mental health issues. Mm. And so instead of having an individual who is poor have to go to multiple locations to access food, clothing, their mental health services, housing, and such. We've tried to have all of it in one spot. They can come. It's almost like there's a menu of things that they can access. And I'm in charge of the housing piece. So as far as Tent City goes, our piece in that is we have an outreach team called PATH that goes out into the tent cities and goes throughout the city and finds people who are living under bridges and such and tries to attach them to services with us and get them into a safe, affordable housing. They kind of pass them on to my team. And we, once they're in the housing, we provide them with supportive services like assistance with life skills, case management, and that kind of thing so that they can address the ancillary problems that they have in their life besides homelessness.
And how did you get involved in – you've been there for quite a few years, right, at mm-hmm. Metro? How did you get involved with them?
Well, with MetroCare, I've been with MetroCare now a little over a year.
Oh, okay.
I was with an organization called LifeNet beforehand.
Okay.
And we merged with MetroCare about a year ago.
Okay.
But I was homeless. In 2008, I suffered from a poker addiction. Hmm. And because of that, I lost my job. And I went to the Bridge for assistance. The Bridge, for those of you who don't know it, is the largest homeless shelter here in Dallas County. And so during that experience, I met some people on the Metro Dallas Homeless Alliance Board who asked me, you know, what can we do to help you? And I don't suffer from a mental illness, at least not a diagnosed one. I'm sure I have some issues. But I said, I just need an opportunity. I need somebody to give me a job. I was being very honest on my resume. I lost my job because of my poker addiction. And I said, hey, if somebody can give me an opportunity, I'll prove that I'm worthwhile and I can do some stuff. And so a gentleman by the name of Liam Mulvaney from LifeNet, the CEO at that time, said, hey, come work with us. I took a minimum wage job, and now I'm running the program.
So for a lot of the people you work with, are they chronically homeless, or are these people who are in situations like you were in where it seemed like it could be a temporary situation?
Most of the people that we work with are chronically homeless. Mm-hmm. So they have some severe mental illness or co-occurring disorders with substance abuse and that kind of thing. The programs that are available for housing, for me, I was people like me kind of fall into the donut hole. And there's stuff for the very severely vulnerable population. And then there's stuff for people who are working and doing well to try and give them a boost. But there's really nothing for that donut hole population. And so it's really important. I'm glad you asked this question. The homeless population is not just the guy that you see on your corner all the time. There's a need in our community for affordable housing for a large demographic. It's not just – I know we're here today to talk about the people who are most vulnerable, but there is a whole nother subset that is getting priced out of our city that we need to recognize.
Definitely, and we will talk a little bit more about that. But first, Mark, talk – your district around White Rock Lake definitely doesn't have the reputation of being a district, not like downtown at least, that has to deal with a lot of people who are chronically homeless. What ideas are you bringing to the table or perspective on this issue?
You know, we don't have a chronic homeless problem near like what they have downtown. But I think this is a problem that's going to require everyone to come to the table with a solution. Mm-hmm. I think from my perspective, one of the things I've been very fortunate to do at City Hall is be in charge of addressing our issues with generational poverty and the issues that go along with that. So I think from my standpoint, from a council perspective, I think it's important for those in my district to know what's going on not around White Rock Lake, because there's money there, there's ideas. So I think we're just trying to make sure that we're not just putting the problem on one council person or two council people, but instead, you know, helping everyone understand that this is something you need to be paying attention to. Because if you don't, if we just have a city of haves and have-nots, and we, like my friend Ken said, you know, if you have folks who fall through the cracks, that's not good for anybody.
Yes, it circles out ramifications. So before we get to brand new ideas in Dallas, and I don't know what came up last night, Blake, let's talk about some of the ideas that haven't worked in Dallas. There have been some efforts to address issues of homelessness in the past that haven't been successful. I don't know how familiar you are with those in past years, even decades. But what have we learned, Blake?
I think what we have learned is that there is a place for innovative thinking, and we certainly need to hear everybody's ideas. But sometimes we also need to recognize that the most complex issues sometimes have the most simple solutions. And in this case, I think it's very clear. It just comes down to affordable housing and creating that in our community so that all of the folks have an opportunity to have a safe home.
Anything stand out for you, Akena?
I second everything that Blake said. But I also like to add that in this community, we've come up with great plans. I mean, I believe that 2007, there was a comprehensive plan that the city was involved with. I think we did another one in 2010 to end homelessness, but we didn't act on it in the manner that we didn't fully act on it, should I say. And if we everybody, you see a lot of great plans, but it's an actionable, the willpower to actually do the plan is what we need to do here in Dallas.
I'll add one thing, which is that I think one huge lesson learned has to do with the creation of disparate impact that we're seeing through all the project-based housing that got built in South Dallas, and not sharing the burden across the city, as Councilmember Clayton is stating. So,
well, and one thing that I think was overlooked yesterday, I sit on the housing committee, and you know, you'll have these credits. So if you want to go build multifamily housing in Dallas, you can get a 4% tax credit if you meet certain criteria, and then you can try to get a 9%. As part of that is the city basically signing a letter saying, hey, we endorse or we do not endorse a project. Well, one of the things that came out of the committee, I thought in a very positive way yesterday, was that we said that we were only going to sign on approvals for housing that's in high opportunity areas, good schools, good access to health care, because I think that's one of the things that she mentioned that I think is a real problem is, you know, you have these areas. We have areas in southern Dallas where we have built all this housing that right now the teen birth rate is worse than sub-Saharan Africa. And if you do not spread out, you know, your housing to where you have access to health care, you can get on a bus in a timely manner, you can get to a job, you can't solve that. And I think that's one of the really hard questions that we're having to really address now from a city level is it's always been, well, developer wants to do X. Well, therefore, you know, we're complicit in that. And now I think we have to say from a city standpoint, you may want to do X, but there needs to be a social reward too. And I think that's where we're starting to try to shift as a city, which I think is a very positive thing.
And what control does the city have over that? How much input is there?
I think we have quite a bit. I mean, we obviously have it from changes of zoning. So if you are wanting to do a project and you need to get better zoning out of the city, we can say, well, you need to have affordable housing that goes to 80% or 50% the area median income. You know, we have what they call tax increment financing districts that if you take public money and you have a housing component, then you have to have a certain amount of housing, you know, that addresses low and moderate income. You know, there's a number of factors there. I think the biggest issue that I think we grapple with at a city is not for a lack of well, we do have a lack of vouchers, but people who are willing to take these vouchers. And I can't probably speak very intelligently about the backside of accepting the voucher, but what I can speak intelligently about is from a city standpoint, you can put policies in place that prevent those barriers from coming up as easily.
So housing vouchers is something that I hope we can touch on in a bit. But briefly, what are housing vouchers like?
So the Dallas Housing Authority will issue housing choice vouchers, which is basically a housing subsidy where you can go to a private landlord and ask if you can rent using a voucher in which you will pay 30% of your income for the apartment and the rest is subsidized by the Dallas Housing Authority.
All right, we're going to get to housing vouchers and affordable housing because that seems like it's the topic that we can all converge on in just a minute. Right now, you're listening to Think on KERA. I'm Lauren Silverman, in for Chris Boyd. We are joined in the studio by Blake Fetterman, Executive Director of the Salvation Army's Carr P. Collins Social Service Center, Dallas City Councilman Mark Clayton, and Akenna Momo, Housing Outpatient Operations Manager for MetroCare Services. That's quite a mouthful. You can join the conversation 800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. You can also send a tweet to @KERAThink.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Graduate Liberal Studies program, where students can customize their degree, like Lonnie Gentry, pursuing healthcare leadership and ethics. More at smu.edu/GLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA. I'm Lauren Silverman, in for Chris Boyd. No doubt you've seen or heard some of the construction around Dallas, people busy erecting glass and concrete apartment towers high above the city. At the same time as those new luxury rentals are being built, places for people with low income and for people without homes are disappearing. This hour, we're talking about new ideas for an enduring problem in Dallas, the problem of homelessness, with three local experts: Blake Fetterman, executive director of the Salvation Army's Carr P. Collins Social Service Center; Dallas City Councilman Mark Clayton; and Ikenna Mobo, housing outpatient operations manager for MetroCare Services. You can join our conversation by calling 800-933-5372 or by emailing fink@kera.org. So, Blake, talk a little bit about how the construction boom in North Texas is affecting efforts to get people into permanent housing.
Well, I think it might have been Ikenna that was saying it's pricing people out of the market. So we have a huge population growth that's happening here in Dallas, which is being seen through all this construction. As a result, we're also have wage stagnation, which is perpetuating the poverty issue, which is, as a result, creating more homelessness. And you put all that together, and we have created a system where folks can't find safe, affordable housing. And that's what it's coming down to.
How do you address that big of a problem? It's because there's so many levels there that it's affecting not just the people who are chronically homeless, but people who are low income and who are at risk of losing their homes. Ikenna, how do you approach this problem?
Well, I think it takes a community or a regional approach to it. I think some of the things that Mark was speaking to about the city and the county doing their agreement for tax credits and development tie to producing this kind of housing. Because if you're going to wait for the private market to do it, it's just not going to happen in this current economy. I mean, if I'm a property developer and I've got the option of developing 200 units of $3,000 one bedrooms, or I can develop some units that I can only rent for $500 a piece, well, that's a no-brainer. I'm in it for the business. And so we as a community have to decide we need to take care of the most vulnerable in our community. And so we have to make structures and have bond issues and such that will finance that kind of housing outside of the private market.
Yeah, so I think that I'm sorry. I just wanted to add that if you look at what some of the most successful cities and communities have done across the nation to address this issue, it is not just relying on the federal government to come in and say, "Oh, here's money to address your homeless problem." It's city, it's county, and it's state and local community investment that's creating these solutions.
Right now, the money that does come from the federal government, how is that distributed?
I'm going to defer to Ikenna on that because we don't.
Well, you know, we have something called the Continuum of Care. And the Metro Dallas Homeless Alliance kind of manages the money that comes into this community through that for that purpose. So we get we've gotten in the past up to around $16 million that comes in for permanent supportive housing or services in this community. We have this particular year, we lost approximately $2 million of that. And that because some things that the federal government are requiring that all communities do to continue to receive that, number one being choose housing first, and we can go into what housing first means. And number two being part of a coordinated access system for the people who want to get the housing, have the same system to get to it, as opposed to every organization that gets the money having their own systems. Some of those things we haven't done as robust a job of putting in place as some other communities have. So in the national competition, we lost out. So is that an insignificant amount of money? Of course not. That's a huge amount of money. But that money alone can't solve the problem that we have here in Dallas.
From the federal government, of
yes.
course.
Yeah, to put it into context, I mean, some experts here in Dallas estimate we need at least $100 million just to start to address the affordable housing issue here in Dallas.
Which is quite a big sum of money. But you're saying, and I just want to return to this because we hear this term a lot, this housing first model. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the requirements that the federal government has for receiving money. And so where is Dallas on the housing first model? What is that?
Well, we're still in the debate stages of, as a community. I mean, I'm just being frank with you. We're still in the debate stages. And it's really, in my opinion, it's a done deal. It's like arguing about is the world flat or round. we should be past debating this, and we should be on to implementation and moving on to some of the other things that we need to tackle as a community. So to talk about what Housing First means, in the past, before Housing First, or organizations that don't do Housing First, they do something that I like to call housing readiness. And what that means is that they have their group of people who say, hey, we've got an idea that we want to help people in this particular arena. And so before we give them this help, we're going to have them do, you know, make sure they're sober or make sure that they go to their doctors a certain amount of time and do all these things so that when we give it to them, they can really embrace it and do the most with it, which I think comes from a good place. I'm not saying they're putting barriers up for no reason, but in hindsight, when we've looked at it, it doesn't show success any more so than if they just put them in there. And so if for Housing First, it's let's put them into the housing, and then we can address some of these other issues, like if they have substance abuse and everything. It would be akin to if you go to a hospital and you have a heart attack. And I use this one all the time. I'm starting to get tired of repeating it. But if you go to a hospital and you have a heart attack, the cardiologist doesn't say, hey, go home, lose some weight, get on a good diet, and then we'll take care of your heart attack. The cardiologist takes care of your heart attack, and then they give you all of those resources and you need, set you up with all of these things that can make you better. If you come back a couple months later, they still take care of your heart attack and still tell you the same thing, because a heart attack is an emergency situation. In our community, not having housing is an emergency situation. How can you really expect someone who has years of substance abuse to get sober when they're still living under a bridge?
I mean, it makes sense when you lay it out like that. And you also have to think with that patient example that they come back into the hospital, they're going to end up back in the hospital unless those other weight loss programs or healthy eating or whatever the programs are to get their cholesterol in line or whatever they need to do are in place. Otherwise, they're going to end up right back in the hospital.
And that's an excellent point. So Housing First doesn't end with the housing. After you put these people in housing, you have to surround them with supportive services, case management, access to a psychiatrist if they have a mental illness, access to a counselor for substance abuse if they have those things, so that they can make sure they can maintain the housing and not be back in a homeless situation afterwards. So it's a combination. A lot of people, when they hear Housing First, they just the conversation stops with just the housing access. But you need the extra things, like any health crisis.
Do you hear much debate in city council about this, Mark, in terms of Housing First versus treatment first? Is this?
I don't think we have those conversations quite like that. Well, I think what we do have the conversations is about the housing. One of the things when Ken was saying, you know, about just the kind of that base layer of getting somebody in a house, what we do know is, you know, you put somebody in a house, they're going to take care of it, and it builds up esteem and all the, you know, hierarchy of needs, you know. Getting them in a house solves a lot of problems. I think one of the things that we debate more, and we're going through this right now, is there's something coming back in front of the council where we're talking about source of income. And as part of a settlement with the federal government, you know, we had to provide for a housing plan, because in the past it's pretty well known that Dallas had a pretty incomplete plan that frankly was a little bit discriminatory. Well, you know, one of the challenges that I think I get very frustrated about, you know, with especially in the multifamily communities, is not wanting to take these vouchers. And they say, well, if I can rent in Uptown for $2,000, well, I don't want to take your voucher because I'm only going to get $500. Well, that's not true. The way those vouchers really work is they will pay – the federal government through these vouchers will pay a market rate, and your input is what you can afford to pay based on a preset formula. And so we do not have a lack of housing in this city. We have a lack of owners and landlords willing to take folks to put them in housing. And I think that's something at a council level we're very concerned about.
I think one thing, though, that we need to understand, though, is that HUD sets fair market value.
HUD is Housing and Urban Development.
Sorry,
oh, no,
yes.
That's okay. They give the money.
And they set fair market rent standards for the city, and our rent prices are well above what HUD says is the fair market rent amount. And that is part of the issue as well.
So they say it should only be $800 a month, and it's really $1,200 a month.
Yes.
And then there's a discrepancy there.
Yes.
So that's like you're saying, Akena, that money from HUD can't be the only source of money, though. That isn't enough to address the amount of housing and create the amount of vouchers that are needed.
Absolutely. The communities that have done a better job. Nobody has solved homelessness in their community, but the communities that have done a better job have done it. And like Blake had said earlier, it's been a combination of all of the solutions. Mm. There's not a silver bullet out there. that says, okay, if you do this, then homelessness will go away and then you can go to the next one. It's too complicated for that kind of thing. And so the communities that have been successful have had it at the local, state, and the federal level, and the foundation level, and the community level. So that is what we are working on in our Dallas Homeless Commission, is a solution that will encompass all of the things that need to come to the table to address this, because it is very complicated.
This hour, we're talking about new ideas for homelessness in North Texas. You can join the conversation. You can email think@kera.org, or you can call 800-933-5372. Let's go to the phones now. Let's go to Kayla, who's calling from Dallas. Hi, Kayla.
Hi. Guys, I've had a really good conversation so far. I'm a student at SMU, and I'm doing a project specifically on housing. My question, though, is how successful has the Grow South initiative been since its implementation, and what are some ways that that plan can be improved?
Thanks for your call.
I think the Grow South initiative has been good. I think where the mayor's done a very good job is applying real resources, you know, towards it. I know as part of that plan, Mayor Rawlings has gotten three leaders to address these three, you know, core areas. Urbandale, I don't remember the exact areas offhand, but I think he's done a good job in getting the private sector to understand that if you don't grow south, you can't grow the city. I think where the challenges lie, and you've had some things come out of that program, Neighborhood Plus being one of them, I think what we're still not there is there's not a cohesive strategy. You know, I think there's been a lot of piecemeal efforts to try to get towards, you know, a goal, but I don't think there's been as good of a plan so far. And I think to the mayor's credit and to some of the chair's credit, like Scott Griggs oversees housing, I think they're trying to get the city moving, rowing kind of in the same direction to get that going. But I think I give it a C plus for right now, but I think in the next 2 years it can get to a good B.
All right, let's go to another question on the phone. Let's go to Lisa, who's also calling from Dallas. Oops. Hi, Lisa.
Hello?
Hi, is this Lisa?
No, I'm calling the KERA.
Oh, I'm sorry. I must have pressed the wrong one there. Hi, what's your question?
Yeah, I had a question for the speakers on the Think show today.
All right, what's your question? Go ahead.
The question is, why wouldn't we just push for the improvement of all the areas through use of the market forces, which is sometimes called gentrification, in that the improvement of the neighborhoods will take place as higher-paying renters move in, as crime goes down, and the presence of gangs and cartels also goes down and vanishes. Now, obviously, this will lead to displacement, but the displacement would be from, say, of a high-expense urban area, perhaps a much, much cheaper and more affordable rural areas of Texas.
All right, let's see. I'm not sure if that was a clear question really there. Do you have a comment, Kenner? You want to go on to it?
I think what I hear the gentleman saying is that we should continue to go down the path that we're going, frankly, where we let the market decide what we do in this community, and the ones that get displaced, we find another place for them to go. And I don't see that as a viable solution. Where this country is built on taking care of the most disadvantaged. It's not built on shipping them to another area. And in fact, the most disadvantaged around the world come to this country because of the opportunities and what we're all about. So I don't know if the caller – I don't agree with the caller.
What about the argument, though, that closing things like Tent City, that is in some sense just shipping people out of downtown? A lot of people feel that way.
Well, with Tent City, we made a comprehensive effort to have placed the people in Tent City into permanent supportive housing or attach them to services and such, because that was the fear, that we'd just come in, we just move them out, and then they go and make another Tent City. Frankly, there has been other Tent Cities that have grown in our community because all of the people there were not necessarily willing to engage in services or move into housing for their own various reasons, or we weren't able to find a placement for them in time, which is why we're here talking about the things that we're talking
about
today.
There's a lot of people there, 300 people or so at the
Well, and I think that's what some of the biggest challenges were. And I think that homeless providers across the board really struggled with the closure of Tent City from the perspective of wanting to help those most in need and is displacing them from a place that they feel is their home, the right answer. But when it gets to 200, 300, 400 people,
yeah,
it gets to a point where there are significant public health and public safety concerns for the people living in Tent City. And we saw that. We saw that with the two people that killed and the additional person who died. And so that's what we were responding to. And but I think with these smaller tent cities that are popping up, we need to be focused more on the immediate solutions to help them, to Kenna's point, get into shelter services and housing, whatever that is, as quickly as possible.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, I do want to say, I agree with Ken about, I understand what the caller was trying to say, but I think that is kind of peeling the scab of what really goes on in major metropolitan areas. You know, I had a conversation the other day about poverty, which I'm the mayor's chair on, along with a lady named Regina Montoya, and somebody asked me, well, how are you going to fix it? And the answer is you won't. You dilute it. You know, and it's one thing to put – it's one thing to do housing stock where you can break up generational cycles of poverty. But when it comes to homelessness, I completely agree with Ken that you can't just sweep it under the rug and hope they go away. You know, the folks that work in that field are handling folks that are at their lowest point. And like my friend Ken, sometimes you get into a situation where you find yourself there. But I would like to think that if I ever find myself in that position, that my city doesn't have as a de facto standard that we're going to ship you to Ennis because we want to have, you know, a new loft for a hipster. So I just find that very, very hard.
You're listening to Think on KERA. I'm Lauren Silverman in for Chris Boyd. On the show today, we're talking about fresh ideas for helping people get into housing in North Texas. In the studio, Dallas City Councilman Mark Clayton, Ikenna Mobo, Housing Outpatient Operations Manager for MetroCare Services, and Blake Fetterman, Executive Director of the Salvation Army's Carr P. Collins Social Service Center. We'd love to hear your thoughts or questions. The number is 800-933-5372, or you can email think@kera.org. We'll be back with more just in 1 minute.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program. You can customize your master's degree to distinguish yourself in the workplace. You can apply now for fall. Deadline is July 1st. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think. I'm Lauren Silverman in for Chris Boyd. Cities across the country are trying new approaches to address the problem of homelessness. In San Francisco, they're experimenting with navigation centers. In Houston, they've embraced Housing First. And Austin, they're trying also tiny houses. This hour, we're talking about new ideas for the problem of homelessness in North Texas with Blake Fetterman. She's Executive Director of the Salvation Army's Carr P. Collins Social Service Center, with Dallas City Councilman Mark Clayton, and with Ikenna Mobo. He's Housing Outpatient Operations Manager for MetroCare Services. You can join the conversation by calling 800-933-5372. So some of those ideas that I mentioned up top there, what is most attractive to you in terms of solutions to homelessness here in Dallas that are innovative? Ikenna, you talked about Housing First. What else is on your mind?
Well, I think that all of those ideas are need to be put in place here. We're not a market where we can just have a simple solution, and we're not. And Dallas is a big mix. So some of the communities that have been successful with these kind of things, for instance, Salt Lake City, Portland, they have a population that is pretty homogenous. And so it's a lot easier to – and they have some powers in them like that have kind of control to say this is what we're going to do in our community. We don't have that luxury here in Dallas. And so we have to have all of the plethora of solutions to address things. We have the tiny house solution here in Dallas. City Square is opening 50, quote-unquote, cottages any day now, right off of where the Tent City used to be for the most disadvantaged members of our community. Our continuum of care is embracing the Housing First principles here in this market. And some of the things that Austin are is doing are some of the things that we will be putting into our plan for, that the City of Dallas Homeless Commission is drafting as we speak. So I don't – I kind of jump back to what I said earlier. I don't think there is one simple solution. I think all of these innovative opportunities should be used and tried here in our community.
One of the issues with that we saw after closing of Tent City almost 2 months ago is that some of the people who were offered services didn't take up the offer or for various reasons. What do you do? I guess we assume that everyone wants housing and wants help with that and that it's going to be easy if we could only get enough resources. But not everyone does want that, right?
Well, yeah, absolutely. And so that part of my organization, MetroCare Services, that I told you about, those street outreach case managers, that's where those people are so important in any community such as ours. Because maybe today that individual says, oh, no, I'm not interested. But I'm going to come out tomorrow. I'm going to come out the next day. And I'm going to keep on just touching base with you. I'm not going to harass you, but I'm going to touch base with you and say, hey, you know, Johnny, how do you feel about this today? And we'll build a rapport. And over time, if you've built a rapport with somebody and you have a trusting level, then they can reconsider some things or their circumstances change and it's not so great in where they're at. And they might consider, okay, let me try this because I know you now. And I'm trusting that this will be what you say it will be. But if you don't have that street outreach group, you don't go out there in the community and touch these people and give them the opportunity on a consistent basis, well, then, yeah, they're going to stay out there forever.
I think the key to all of that, and I agree with Ikenna, is that we have to have the ability to connect people with the resources and the services when they are ready. And so when we can't do that, when we say, are you ready for shelter today? Are you ready for shelter today? Yes, I'm ready today. Oh, we can't find a shelter bed for you. And are you ready for housing today? Are you ready for housing today? Yes. Oh, we can't get you into housing for 6 months. So we need to be able to follow through with our commitments. Otherwise, that trust gets broken. And it just keeps coming back to we need more resources.
Let's go to the phones now. Let's go to Abby, who's calling from Dallas. Hi, Abby.
Hi. I'm calling. Actually, you just mentioned something about my comment / question. The people that are not willing, it might be way more of a mental illness issue for sure. My dad actually passed away on the streets or died on the streets because he never really chose to, he never wanted to follow the rules. So how would y'all reach out? What's your strategy for the people that never ever want to follow the rules, even if someone built rapport with him? He had a supportive family, never wanted to have to follow the rules. He wanted to live on his own. How are we going to – what's the strategy for that, I guess?
Thanks, Abby. Who wants to take that one?
Well, I think Housing First model addresses some of that, but I think at the end of the day I hate to say things like this, but we can't reach everybody. I mean, there's just – we can try and we still will every day. Those outreach workers are going to go out. And we can do everything we can, but we don't always have options for everybody.
And I think, you know, as part of this conversation, exactly to your point, there are those that you'll never reach. And for whatever reason, and to the caller, I'm so sorry about her loss and probably the emotions that go along with having a father who put themselves into that position. But I think the bigger point is if our providers are going to go into the community and say, how about housing today? And as policymakers, we don't provide them that option, then we're failing. You know, I think one of the things as the City of Dallas that we're going to have to really have a hard conversation about is doing a program similar to Austin where we applied bond money specifically towards housing. And I think the reason that's important is if you get the community buy-in to it where people have to vote, then they can't hide from the problem. You know, it's not somebody else's problem. Then it's we as a city are going to either choose to do this and to take care of the least of those, or we're going to choose not to. And I think that's something that's important conversation. I would want to say just briefly too, I think sometimes at a city level, you know, or at a, you know, a micro level of that, you know, I think the buck kind of stops at, well, council or form a government, do something. But I think at a state level, I think we've been deprived of resources in a massive way, whether it's, you know, mental health resources or, you know, lack of affordable care or the Affordable Care Act. You know, we need to hold our state leaders accountable too to make sure that, that they're providing resources that can take care of everyone.
These issues are so intertwined, and that last caller touches on the issue of mental health and, in general, just medical care. It seems like it's quite a challenge to get medical care to people who are temporarily or chronically homeless. How is that going in North Texas, in Dallas in particular right now, efforts on health care?
Well, to touch on what Mark was saying, we as a state need to expand Medicaid.
Absolutely.
All right. It's time to do it. I mean, Oklahoma is probably more conservative than the state of Texas, and they're even doing it. So we need to come to the point where we know there's a health need. We need to go ahead and do that. But in my organization, MetroCare Services, we have recognized that you cannot just address mental health without also addressing primary care issues. And so we've begun to put primary care clinics throughout our mental health clinics and coordinate that care so that we can improve the greater health of all the individuals that we touch. So that is the model that the government is behind. That is the model that the foundations are behind. And we as a community need to pool our resources in that matter as well.
And there are quite a few. Parkland, I know, has an extensive mobile health vans mm-hmm. that they use to try and reach people who are out in the community as well. But like you're saying, that alone is not going to be enough. And the people there who run that program have told me that they also would like to see Medicaid reform so mm-hmm. that they can access and help more people. Let's take another call now. Let's talk with Lisa, who's calling from Dallas. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
A while ago, you did a segment on teenage homelessness, in particular teenagers that were trying to move forward to go to college, but they were couch surfing. And we have an empty school at the end of my block. And I'm wondering why we can't use facilities that are sitting vacant to provide shelter for these students so they can move forward. And as a private citizen, if I wanted to try to push something like that forward, how would I go about doing that? Because the facilities there, they could live there like in dormitory style, and then they already have a cafeteria. They could have counselors come in and help them with their admissions, things like that. But I just have no idea how to move forward with trying to get something like that up and running.
All right. Thank you so much. Councilman Mark, do you want to take that?
Yeah, everybody looked at me, and so I guess I'm up. I think it's a great idea. You know, I think there's a shortage of great ideas. If I understood her correctly, then it's a DISD school. You know, I think first approaching the trustee that serves the area. DISD has a habit, which they should, they hang on to the real estate. And, you know, being able to use it. I think the biggest cost is if it's an old building, you know, the rehab of the building to get it to a point where you can house folks. So, you know, there's always a cost to it, but I think the first step to that is, you know, talking to the trustee that serves the area.
But there have been some ideas like this out there. I've heard about one about converting the old Hensley Field Naval Air Station into a complex called Dignity Field. Mm-hmm. What other ideas like there, and what potential are there for converting unused space?
We have talked about the Hensley Field. I know Chairman Griggs of the Housing Committee and the mayor have talked about that quite a bit. And I think that's actually a really good idea. You know, again, I'll go back to, you know, there's a short term, there's a long term. I think the long game is, you know, we need to make a commitment as a city to say we're going to put our money where our mouth is. And it's not just shipping off low-income housing to South Dallas. You know, they've had their share. But I think on the short term, the Hensley Field's the one I hear the most that I really – like I do say, I'm not an expert on building, but you know, we talk about the tiny houses, but then the price tag is not tiny.
Yeah.
And you know, I go to my church and I see they had one, they built it for $100,000, but we built 15, it cost $30 million. And something about that needs to be looked at in a more, you know, concrete way.
I think when things are tiny, we automatically think they're cute and it's going to be a great solution, but maybe some more research needs to go into that. We have an email from Brad. He asks, what resources are available for employers who may want to help or hire homeless individuals? He asks also, is there any medical clearance to ensure that the potential employee doesn't have a mental illness that may jeopardize the employer?
I think that's a great question coming from someone who sounds like willing to extend employment resources to those who need jobs. And what I would say is to reach out to the shelters or homeless providers in your local community. I know that we have specific programs for folks that are working or work ready, as well as a whole slew of folks that we work with who in eviction prevention programming, and they're all looking for higher paying jobs. And so I would say reach out.
Any comments, Akena?
I agree completely, but I would like to add also that he already has people with mental illness working for him. I mean, the homeless population just reflects the same demographic of the non-homeless population as far as those kind of issues. You know, we talk about the homeless population like they're a separate species, but they are people. And so there are many people who are functioning at jobs who are suffering from severe mental illness. There are many people who are functioning with jobs with addictions. I already mentioned mine, and I'm doing halfway decent right now. So I don't think there needs to be a litmus test to say, hey, if you are you clean and I'll give you a job. You need to say, do you have the skill set to do this job? And if you are qualified, I'll give you this opportunity. And you and I believe any business will find with people who are who have suffered from deep poverty, they'll be more likely than the average citizen to stay and work hard because they haven't been given these opportunities in the past.
Yeah, thanks for that very important second half of that question that I did not answer.
So what happens after the public meetings that are being hosted? There was one last night, there'll be one tonight, and there'll be a few more by the Dallas Commission on Homelessness. What are the next steps? Mark, do you want to go ahead?
I mean, I think what we're looking for is concrete solutions. And then, you know, as we go into budget time, we really have two really unique opportunities. You know, number one, you know, we're going into our budget season. And so by September, you know, we'll have that cooked. So if we're going to do things that say apply this amount of money in the short term, now's the time we need to know about it. And then also, too, we're getting into our needs inventory for the upcoming bond election in May of 2017. So if there are ideas out there that can really move the needle, this is the time to advocate for it. I will say, I think one of the things that's been a pleasant surprise about being on the council is, you know, we bicker, you know, like cats and dogs up there. But I think the one commonality that we have from the most conservative person on the council to the most liberal person on council is, I think, a real understanding that what we've been doing is just not good enough and we need to be doing more.
Thank you so much for all of you for coming in. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is Think from KERA. I was joined in the studio with Mark Clayton, Dallas City Councilman, with Ikenna Mobo, Housing Outpatient Operations Manager for MetroCare Services, and Blake Fetterman, Executive Director of the Salvation Army's Carr P. Collins Social Service Center. Tonight, there will be another public meeting hosted by the Dallas Commission on Homelessness, and you can find details on the Think page at kera.org. Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. You can contact us via email, think@kera.org. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.